All right, so today on the Imitating Jesus podcast, we're talking about the D word. The dirty little word, that scary word, that emotionally charged D word. And I'm curious what everybody's got in their mind. But what we're talking about today is the idea of deconstruction. And we know in American Christianity today, this is a really big topic. And we recognize there's a lot of voices out there talking about it. So our conversation today is not meant to be a definitive one. But I do believe we have some unique and qualified voices in this room right now, not to solve this riddle, but maybe just to help us think about this process, how we can help ourselves think about it, and how we can help others who are this is part of their lived experience or that of one that they love and care for. So this is a new season of our podcast. We're talking about conversations with disciple makers. And so around this table, I introduced a few guests that we have today, some dear disciple-making friends. Start here on my right, Mr. Jeffrey Hayden. Jeff, we're glad to have you on a podcast today.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Yeah, first time, longtime friend, but first time contributor. So we're happy to have you and your story uniquely speaking to this idea. Also, Anna Robinson. Hi, Anna.
Hi, good to be back.
Anna's got a big birthday coming up next week, so we're excited. She's turning 40.
Very funny.
Maybe 30. But anyway, we won't talk about that. It's improper to talk about age publicly. And Louis, speaking of the aged, it's good to have you here, bud.
It's good to be back.
Ah, that means a lot. Okay, so let's start at the very rudimentary places of, again, lots of topics, lots of discussion about deconstruction. But I think seems like the good place to start with is, what is deconstruction? What is it? What is it not? Give me your thoughts on that. Jeff, maybe start with you.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think with the word as charged as deconstruction, you can ask 100 different people and get 100 slightly different nuanced responses. Really, the concept of deconstruction was originated by a French philosopher named Jacques Derrida.
Oh, one of my favorite French philosophers. Yeah. Top 200. Yeah, anyway.
His name is really fun to say.
It's my guy.
So he actually got this term from a German philosopher named Martin Heidegger. Whose original use of the word deconstruction was actually a translation of the German word destruction.
Destruction.
Okay. So that word was actually coined by Martin Luther, interestingly enough. But Heidegger used this word really to refer to a process of exploring the categories and concepts that tradition has imposed on a word and the history behind them. So, you know, when we're talking specifically here about faith deconstruction, it's applying this dismantling, this taking apart into the various aspects of our faith. Anna, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, probably the very simple thing I would say that, you know, most experiences of deconstruction have in common is it's questioning. It's finding some level of maybe dissonance or discomfort with the things that you believed previously, or are still trying to figure out if you believe, and then kind of trying to figure out, okay, what is my current and maybe future relationship with these things going to be? That's the simple way I would put it.
Yeah.
I've heard if the Christian faith is a home, pursuing tough questions about your faith is kind of like tearing up the carpeting a little bit, seeing what's under there. It's blasting through the drywall and kind of get into the bones of the thing and to see what it's really made of. So kind of pulling things apart so we can see what's really there. And then usually once you knocked a hole in your wall, you fix it. Like you patch it. Like it's more beautiful and better from there. But that goes to the idea of, again, I introduced this idea as a dirty word, but is deconstruction a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Louis, what do you think about when you think of deconstruction, what it is, what it isn't?
Well, I'm looking at it from a disciple-making standpoint. You know,
that's new for you?
That's something new for me. And in disciple-making, part of the thing you're trying to do is take a person who is duplicit in his mind. He has contradicting things going on in his mind and his life, and bringing those together in union, I would say, under to Jesus, you know. And you're seeking to bring them in union with God, and you're seeking to bring them in union with themselves and then also in union with others. Men will know you're my disciples by your love for one another. And so I want to know when I'm having this conversation with my disciple, I want to know where he or she is at as far as in their own mind. I want it to be a safe place for them to be able to be honest with me about what really is going on in their heart and mind. I don't care if they grew up in church in their life. I don't care if they're going to a Christian college. What is really happening and going on in their heart and mind?
Hmm. I think the hard part about having this discussion on a macro level is partly because I think deconstruction, in a sense, if we're talking about kind of an untangling of what is true of God's words versus what Christian culture specifically has kind of saddled onto that. Like, if we're pulling those things apart, taking a look at them, and then putting back together what we think is the core essence of biblical Christianity, you know, I think that can be a positive thing. If deconstruction is just this idea of a march towards postmodern, relativist, progressive views where there's no such thing as absolute truth, and I just want to be unshackled from what seems to be an oppressive culture or belief, then I feel like the difference in those two things is, I feel like in the former is that you're moving towards something, and the latter you're just moving away from something.
Well, I say it this way: give me a sledgehammer and I can tear down a house, you know.
Sure.
That's not hard. Say, okay, Louis, build me a house. Here's all the materials and all the tools you need. I'd struggle. You know, and so that kind of going to your point there, that balance there, I don't mind, you know, the honesty of deconstruction if we're moving towards, you know, a good, you know, a building, not just, okay, I want to tear this down with really no purpose. How would you guys think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the process of deconstruction, the concept of, you know, essentially it's taking something apart to really understand its core essence, and like why it is the way that it is, taking your lens into it, taking the culture you grew up, you know, into account with it. I think that is, you know, it's pretty innocuous. It's and I think it can also be done recklessly. And you know, specifically, I think it's when you're tearing something down with no concept or no intention of putting something back into its place, that I think creates a vacuum, which, you know, in that sense, I think is actually, you know, a misuse of the term, or like a misuse of the benefit that I think that, you know, deconstruction can place. Yeah, Anna, how do you see it?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I mean, I think it's, there are ways, I think, where sometimes, you know, deconstruction can be get thrown around as something that's trendy or cool. But I think, you know, at its core, it's hard to go wrong if you are taking something apart because you genuinely want to find out what is true. I mean, I think it can still be a complicated and messy process, but I would much rather, and I would find it, you know, much healthier for someone to say, okay, yeah, I really need to kind of take this apart and figure out, is this really real? Can I put my hope in it? Rather than just have someone, you know, faking it, having someone, you know, feeling pressure to like, I'm just going along with this, when it doesn't actually seem real to them. And that seems a much worse option in my view.
Carl Truman, he's a author and philosopher, said that the misuse of the Derridian D word can kind of like give this process this false sense of like intellectualism. When in fact, you know, I've had myself included and, you know, many people in my life that have kind of gone through this process of, you know, quotations, deconstruction, but really it's just a way to kind of like de-shackle myself from, you know, the faith that I was raised in, and then be able to do whatever it is that Jeff wants. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is, you know, Louis, you were mentioning earlier, is like this the importance of intellectual honesty in the process of deconstructing and doing that alongside your disciple, so that you know, they're not doing it in a vacuum. I think if you do this process in a vacuum without other people speaking into it, that's where it can really get dangerous.
Well, and I think you're, and I triggered something in my own thinking on deconstruction. As I meet with those who are deconstructing, often I think this is as much of an emotional struggle than it is an intellectual struggle. I'm not saying it can't be an intellectual struggle, mm-hmm. but I think often there's a tension within mm-hmm. them in the church they grew up in, or in the mm-hmm. faith they grew up in, where they, you know, emotionally they're just wore out, or like it's not worth the effort. Explain that a little bit more, Anna. I've heard you speak on that before.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, it would be weird if our emotions were left out of this. because, I mean, I think, you know, so much of, you know, the process of asking questions, of doubting things, like a lot of the time that's coming from some sort of experience of dissonance, you know, whether that's in the faith community that we've grown up in, or different convictions we have, just finding ourselves in a kind of a place of emotional dissonance that I don't know that this thing I thought I believed in is doing what I thought that it should do, or I don't know that I'm experiencing it in the way that was kind of told to me that this thing was supposed to be like. And that dissonance kind of starts to drive, okay, I need to figure this out. Is this really the thing that I thought it was, or is it something else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and it causes a tension within them, and they've got to get relief,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think the deconstruction maybe gives them an out a little bit, a depressurization.
Sure.
Maybe a safety valve.
Yeah.
In their minds, because it's like you said, it's not working for me.
Right. Well, and I think what makes all of those like emotionally supercharged is so many of these things are really, they're caught in identity. Mm. And so when you're challenging assumptions around faith, around God, around church, around, you know, politics or whatever your worldview is, our identity is wrapped up in all of those things. And so, like, of course it's emotionally charged. Quite frankly, I don't know if we would be motivated to deconstruct things if they weren't, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a pretty trendy thing to do right now, but I'd be really surprised if many people go into this process because it's a trendy or cool thing to do. But,
exactly.
But just because there's hurt and there's questions, because there's a huge mm-hmm. cost to it. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The social mm-hmm. loss, the just confidence and security loss, like I can imagine it is a very very deep and dark woods to walk through.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Absolutely. And I think it certainly depends on, like, you know, what the topic is, or like what the motivations are.
Mm-hmm.
As you think about that, even of like what the motivations are to deconstruct, I think that at the root of all of it is some sense of pain,
yeah.
of loss, of disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in your own journey, how did, you know, you mentioned earlier that you can deconstruct it when you were younger.
Mm-hmm.
What motivated that for you, as you describe all these things?
First of all, you deconstructed before it was cool to deconstruct.
Yeah.
Am I right?
I know. I do think of myself a little bit as a trendsetter.
So you're the one we have to thank.
Yeah. It's my fault. but no, I think for me, it was Jesus' promise of the good life. you know, I was raised in a Christian home. I was homeschooled. I went to Bible college. I did all of the things that one ought to do. And Jesus' promise of the good life did not equate with my lived experience. And so it called into question, again, things that I mentioned, doubt, disappointment, disenfranchisement with the expectation that I was raised to then say, like, okay, what is following Jesus at its essence? What is, you know, apprenticing under him at its core? And so if you start doing that, it can be a very isolating experience, because you are calling into question your identity, and then therefore all of the people and communities that you have at one point aligned yourself with. And I think that to me is like, talk about the one of the dangers of deconstruction. It is that. It is going that road alone.
Yeah. And what's so dangerous about that?
I think, like, I really believe that when we move through life alone, when we ask these deep questions of who am I, who has God created me to be, where do I belong, and like that is really where evil and the enemy, I think, has the opportunity to grab a foothold in your heart, really isolate you from, from your community.
And I've heard you talk about this before, and just how it's not often within churches or with the families, it's not a safe place to ask questions or to be even to say, hey, this isn't working for me. So is that tied into that aloneness? Is that kind of what you're getting at there?
Yeah, I mean, I think there can be a huge sense of isolation if you're, you know, if you're in an environment where you feel like your questions or your experience, either they're not welcome or they make everyone uncomfortable. that's not a fun place to be in. And I think walking through that kind of can very... naturally take you to a place of exhaustion, and kind of like Jeff was saying, like as you start down the road of, okay, I'm gonna ask these questions, I'm gonna like really really work through these things, like in a sense it's, there could be a very brave choice in that you're choosing to be awake to what is hard, to what is difficult, to what is dissonant, to what is, to what just doesn't quite make sense in faith. And I think that's a really difficult set of muscles to build. Mm. And I think doing that alone is, I don't think it's sustainable. And I think, you know, it can start to give us, you know, a warped picture of reality. I think ultimately, you know, we're meant to be doing this together. And we need people to not just be with us to, you know, get the questions answered, but just to be with us as we get used to having questions.
Well, how about the tricky bit in this is we're compelling people to not walk through this alone, but how do I engage and interact with people who may represent like the things that I'm questioning, who may be ambassadors of these ideas that I think I'm rejecting? Like, how do I have my thoughts with that kind of people? You see my dilemma? You see the dilemma there? Like, I get compelling people to not go on this journey alone, but what if I feel like the people around me are the ones that I'm questioning?
It's a good question. I mean, like, I think not every space and not every person is going to be equipped to, you know, handle the kinds of questions that you have. I think, you know, in ideal circumstances, you know, you do find people who are able to hold very strong convictions without trying to force you to arrive at those and are able to hold space for your questions. But at least, you know, your starting point, you don't always find those people. But I do think it's important to seek out friends, to seek out people who will be with you in the questioning and the figuring it all out along the way.
Yeah. And I think also just like the importance of like, well, gosh, Lily, 15 years ago, you found me on the streets
with a sledgehammer in your hand,
with a sledgehammer in my hand, and really, really pushed me to do the work. Cause like at that point, you know, I had left school and was just incredibly disappointed. I think through a lot had come to either the decision that either God is not who he says he is, or if he is, I want nothing to do with him. And, you know, what I really appreciated in our friendship is that you gave me the space to have those feelings and to ask those questions and also really pushed me to say, okay, that's fine, but you got to do the work. You've got to read, you have to study, you have to validate like what you believe. And do that by you know, engaging with both sides. Don't just read or don't just, you know, go after affirmations for all of the reasons why you think this is wrong. Go also to the other end of the spectrum and read, go after everything in between. And after you have done the work, after you've done the exploration, then what is true? And what I appreciated about that, and still to this day, I'm so grateful for, is the faith that you believed and you put in the truth, with a capital T. That if I do the work, truth will find me. And that was really helpful. And that gave me the courage to do the work. That gave me the permission to really dive into it with the honesty that was required to be able to validate what is following Jesus at its core.
I spoke at a Christian college recently, and the professor, I spoke on disciple making and friendship, and one of the professor asked the class, how many of you in this class have been either discipled or mentored, you know, in your Christian experience? Mm-hmm. Two kids out of the whole class. Okay.
Wow.
And deconstructing, not be intimidated by them, not be afraid of them, not be threatened by them, but in my friendship with Jeff, is I pursued him and listened and gave him space to be able to speak what he was thinking in a safe place. And Anne, I've heard you kind of address that about safe places. And what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, safe places, I think, you know, needing that, you know, kind of connection with people who are able to befriend you in the middle of what you're going through, and who are able to normalize it a bit. Because I mean, I think, you know, when it comes down to it, like whether or not we would all use the word deconstruction, it's very, very developmentally normal that we reach a stage of faith where, you know, we find some dissonance, where we realize the places that we are struggling with God, or we are struggling with, you know, what we believe. And, you know, we're wrestling through those things. We're asking questions about those things. That's actually how you get to more sure convictions. That's where you get to places of greater stability, by doing that kind of wrestling. And I think when you have people that are able to respond to you in those moments without anxiety, but just with, yeah, I'm here with you, and I want to walk with you through that and help you as you're asking those questions, that's really comforting. It can be really reassuring.
What do you guys think it is about this particular cultural moment that we're in that we are seeing this happening more and more? I know Charles Taylor, your homeboy, Louis, he in the Secular Age, he talks about the conditions of belief that have to be there to make belief plausible. Mm-hmm. But what about flipping that around and saying what conditions are currently happening in our culture that's making deconstruction so plausible? What cultural factors, what structural factors do you guys see?
I mean, disconnection.
Yeah.
Disconnection is a big one, and I think, you know, you could point to a bunch of historical factors in this, but I think when it comes down to it, like when you have a society that's getting more and more kind of distant from one another, where, you know, instead of, you know, having the communities that we grow up in, you know, being the communities that we stay in and we look to for, you know, where we're asking our questions, where we're wrestling through things. And, you know, you can look at back on that nostalgically, and you can look back on that with, there were problems, you know, with that too. But I think in the current state we have, you know, you can pick up your phone at any moment and find, you know, a bunch of expertise that's, you know, from outside of the people that you know, that you can just explore questions in a whole new way. And there's good things about that, and then there's, you know, real challenges that come with that as well, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think actually deconstruction in some ways is not new. What Martin Luther did was, in today's definition, would be considered deconstruction. And so from that sense, is like, I think the difference between today and maybe times of old is we're living in the information age. Like Anna said, we're living with, you can have expertise, I'll put that in quotations, at your fingertips through your phone. And these online communities, and really just communities in general, can really create echo chambers. You know, for folks. And I think, again, that's where it's, you know, again, it ties back to that danger of, if you're only surrounding yourself with people that think like you, that do things that you would do, then, like, all it does is just reinforce your own core thoughts and beliefs. Mm-hmm. And so the danger for the deconstructionist in that is they can surround themselves with those that are grappling with similar questions, which can then, you know, could manifest itself in terms of like an embracing of like a nihilism of like there's a hopelessness in this, and it doesn't have to be that way. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I have a lot more questions.
Me too.
But maybe we can pick this conversation up another time. But is any other wrap up thoughts to what we've been talking about today, Louis or Anna or Jeffrey?
Mine is, you know, I think that sometimes by the person employing it, right, or by the person doing it, and sometimes I think by its misinterpretation or its misuse, something like deconstruction gets a really bad name. Mm-hmm. And it is not bad in and of itself. Mm-hmm. It can be a really powerful, useful tool if you're doing it around, you know, the right kinds of things and in the right way. But it is not, deconstruction does not equal deconversion. Mm-hmm. They're not synonymous. Mm-hmm. That would be mine. It's like, there is hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's a really good word. I think, I mean, there can be, I think, a temptation if you're not like in the middle of it, and if you're kind of looking at it from the outside as this scary thing. You just always kind of want to other the experience of like people asking questions and people, you know, who seem to be feeling all of this, you know, dissonance and confusion that you don't really see the point of. And I think it's worth remembering that, you know, a lot of a lot of these people have things to say that are really worth listening to. I think all of them do. I think, you know, deconstruction comes from a place of noticing things that very often should be noticed. It should be noticed when we, you know, find that the way we're living out our faith doesn't actually match what we're saying we believe. These places of seeming incompatibility, they're things that are worth exploring so that, you know, we can see what it become, what it looks like to become more faithful together.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you guys for joining in and listening to this podcast with us today. As always, you can head on over to iconministries.org and connect with us there or access other articles or videos on making disciples. Thank you for joining us today.